What is a psychic medium?
A psychic is somebody who has the ability to connect with energy, talk about what's happening in your life and what's coming up for you. And the medium aspect is kind of being a specialist of being a psychic. You have the ability to connect with the afterlife.
So did you get all that? Do you believe it? Because he didn't.
I went to debunk this woman doing readings. Like, I was positive that this was all like stuff that I was going to be able to like see through. And that reading changed my life. She was mind-blowingly accurate. Oh, and she told me that I can do it.
He took her advice and has now been doing that for years, including working with the FBI. He didn't and couldn't provide you with information and ask you to interpret it.
He knew not to cross the line of giving me information because then that would color my, I would get a bias.
Psychic medium, best-selling author John Edward here to discuss his newest book now on this episode
of The Pulse.
Guys, welcome to another episode of The Pulse. And every week when I do this show, I talk about my favorite part is talking to interesting people who are doing cool things. The theme of Use Your Voice for Good. Today's guest, John Edward, falls into all of those categories. So, hosted multiple shows, best-selling author, new book is out, is just intriguing. Is it fair to define you as a psychic medium? Am I allowed to say that? Like, some people take issue when you say that outright.
No, you could say that. That would be the title. I am a psychic and I am a medium, so therefore I'm a psychic medium. Okay. So yes.
As well as an investigator, which is like, again, intriguing. So we've got a lot to unpack. I have right here with me the newest book, soon to be, I guess, the next bestseller, Chasing Evil. Intriguing. But thank you for taking time out of your schedule to join us on The Pulse.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So backpedaling some, because it's an interesting story even before it gets to all the interesting things that you've been doing throughout your career. So how'd you get into this? Because you were not one of those people who was born going, okay, I'm a psychic.
Yeah, no, that's not me. My dad was a New York City police officer, career military guy, who made sure that when my mom and her side of the family had psychics come to the house, which they did a couple times a year, sometimes more than a couple times a year, I was never allowed to be around the subject matter. So that was fine until my parents separated and divorced. And then I lived in the house where they did this, where they would have psychics come and think Tupperware party, take out Tupperware, insert psychic. Okay. And I wound up going to debunk a woman. Her name is Lydia Clark. I went to debunk this woman doing readings. And I said to my family that she wouldn't be able to read for me. Like, I wasn't going to help her the way that I thought they were helping her. And that reading changed my life. She was mind-blowingly accurate with things that there's no way possible she could have known. And then those things started happening. So she got my attention real clear. That put me on my path. Okay. And that's how I started. I kind of felt like my world was turned upside down at 15. And how did this woman know what she knew? And nobody could have told her. Like, I would have had to have told her stuff. And then she gave me outcomes that were not logical that happened. So she validated for me the reality that this work existed. Oh, and she told me that I can do it.
So she validated for you something that you were not seeking validation for. You actually were trying to prove she's a fraud.
I was, actually. Yeah, that was my goal.
Okay.
Maybe not so harshly, like, you know, I'm going to prove that you're a fraud, but I was going to be like, this is like, you know, she's going to ask you like 57 questions and you're going to like fall into her traps. And like, I was positive that this was all like stuff that I was going to be able to like see through. And what she did is something called psychometry. Psychometry is where you hold onto a person's like object. Mm-hmm. And she took my high school ring and she just leaned into it, closed her eyes and started talking. She didn't look at me. She didn't ask me questions. She just started giving me information. And I remember really, really clearly, like, thinking that she was crazy. Yeah. Because she was so serious. Like, she was taking herself so serious. I was like, okay, I'll be polite. Because my mom told me how to be polite. I was like, I'll be polite. But she was accurate. Like, the stuff that she was saying was intensely specific. So she got my attention.
So your father was a police officer. Down to earth, laid back guy, but was not buying this.
Mm-mm.
And your mom defined as kind of spiritual. So she was all in, you know, but there was nothing that was guiding you on this path.
No, my mom was a psychic. My mom and my grandmother, I used to jokingly call them psychic junkies. Okay. Like they couldn't get enough of the subject matter. They loved it. And my dad used to make fun of it. He used to just say like, that's something that the ladies do. You know, it's like, it's not for men. Like that's not real. Like, you know, he would have expressions and ways of referring to it that would be politically not correct.
Okay. So you 15, mm-hmm. you're not believing you, I can talk to this woman. She's not going to be able to read me, but nothing up until that point kind of leading you down that path. You had no indication that you had that skill or talent or ability.
No, I mean, I used to hear stuff from my family like, oh, you've got such a vivid imagination. Now, after that reading, after going down my own path of learning about the subject matter, and the way that I explain it is I say, if you ever have a home invasion, if you've ever been robbed, mm-hmm. the first thing that you want to do is put a better alarm system in, right?
Yeah.
So I kind of felt like that reading felt like a violation to me. So it sounds like it was really cool, but I didn't feel like it was really cool. I kind of felt like, whoa, this was a little invasive. No, I didn't really enjoy this. Like I didn't walk out of there going like, this was really cool. I walked out of there going, I don't know if I like this. And if she could do that, maybe somebody else could do that. And I need to learn about this. So I didn't go learn about it because she told me I could do this, which she did in the beginning. I went to go learn about it to figure out like, how do I put an alarm system in? How do I make sure like this doesn't happen again? As I was reading back then in 1985, everything that was written under the occult section of the public library, mm-hmm. I was like, this isn't psychic. This is common sense. Like we all do this. And then I started asking high school friends, like, haven't you seen your dead grandfather? And then I remember one of my friends going, no.
No.
I'm like, you've never ever like happened to see him. And he was like, no. Have you? And I was like, yeah. But because I grew up in an environment that was so open, if I said something, you know, nobody made a statement. Nobody blinked. Nobody was like, oh my God, wow. It was just like, yeah, that's your grandfather or whatever. So to me, it was normal. Like it was, so my version of normal had to be redefined.
So you're normal. When I asked, did you have signs at a young age? You did. You just weren't aware of the fact that they were signs. You just thought everybody was having those similar experiences.
Correct. And by the way, I believe that a majority of people do, but they may just not know what to call it. So it may be a coincidence or a funny dream, you know, a thing. Oh, that's weird. And then they move on. I just had a lot of it.
So 15, this happens. This woman kind of starts you on your path. You're going to get more, you know, information. I'm going to protect myself from this. Somewhere between 15 and 30, this becomes your thing.
Yes. Yeah, it became my thing pretty quickly. It became my thing within about 6 months of that. I became, I don't want to use the word obsessed, but I had a voracious appetite for knowledge. And I went through every book the public libraries had in my area. Then I started like buying books on the subject matter. I got involved with learning about tarot and the esoteric understanding of the human archetype and experience within tarot, you know, the fool's journey. I started delving into like Buddhism and different spiritual ways of looking at life, numerology, a little bit about astrology. I just wanted to like, it just felt like, oh, wow. Like there's so much more than what I thought I had access to. And I felt very, very strongly about working with cards because they were tangible and they told a story. And I didn't really resonate with astrology and I didn't resonate with numerology as much. I understood a lot of it, but I didn't do it. But the cards I worked with, and I still refer to that as my first love. So I watched the projections that came out of readings with clients, cousins, actually, happen relatively quickly. And then they would tell their friends and then their friends' friends would tell friends. And that's how I started reading people. And I was just doing what's happening now in your life, what's coming up for you. And the validations that I got were always about the past. So I always get people's names and they would be people that were, you know, connected to the people that I was reading. And then around 1987, the other side started connecting with me. And then in 1989, my mom passed. And when my mom passed, everything shifted. It was a very strong catalytic moment for needing to know where she's at. Would she still be able to connect with me? Would she see my kids? Like all of the, you know, normal grief things kicked in. And it kind of shaped, I think, my work a little bit, all while I was working on a master's degree for healthcare and public administration.
So this was very, and I apologize to people watching. I'm moving through this fairly quickly, and there's a lot to unpack, but partly because I want to get to the book, because it's so fascinating as well. So you continue to expand. You're reading people. This becomes your life, your obsession, in quotes, your career. You're writing books. You go on Larry King, and that kind of blew the doors off. Okay, so you do the Larry King thing, and then you hosted Crossing Over with John Edward. All of this seems like it was kind of just kind of matter of fact. Like, this is what I do. It doesn't feel like you were ever one of those people who's seeking approval or seeking to convince people that this works. It just, you were just doing it.
I think once you come across, like for me, once I was proving it to myself, client after client after client, I didn't need it externally. I was too busy doing it internally. Mm-hmm. Like I already had my father's voice in my head. Like that was a seed that was now a tree. So like I was constantly, when I was reading for people, I was reading them as if I had like Statler and Waldorf, the two old guys from the Muppets, right, like ready to pounce on anything I was going to say. Indirectly, that was like my dad's voice in the back of my head. So yeah, no, I wasn't seeking validation externally. I was really doing it within the readings on my own.
So for context, this is late 80s, early 90s, through the 90s. This wasn't really, I mean, I don't know if it's ever a thing, but it's certainly much more of a thing now. It's not that unusual. It wasn't then. And you have a show, very widely watched show, actually shows, but you're doing this kind of every day. Like you're out there doing, at a time when people weren't. You know, and so you had to face a bunch of you, you know, like people who were trying to see, this guy's a fraud. He's not, I'm not. And did it at a time then when people weren't buying this? Like, what was that like?
I think I've always had a healthy understanding because I came from that place. So I never took it personally because I was that person. So I always reflected back on them coming from a place of, you know, ignorance or not understanding, sometimes arrogance. And I think that there's a difference between skepticism and cynicism. Skepticism is something that I implore everybody to have, specifically in 2025. We need to have skepticism. We want to be critical thinkers about everything in every field. And there's no reason not to be a seeker and an explorer. But being cynical stops progress. Being cynical stops us from being able to advance in any field. So I was never okay with cynicism. And I was also never okay with someone defining my personal intentions. That's the only place I ever had a problem. When people would say, you know, well, he's doing this because of this, or he's doing this because of that. And I was like, no, you don't know me, so you don't have a right to say that. But I've always been respectful of someone coming from a skeptical standpoint.
Now we're talking about 30 years, right? Like 30 years plus that you've been doing this, national and international shows, national and international tours. It's now 8 books kind of out there and doing this. And through those books, I mean, through life, you've continued to do these readings. And I guess the fact that you're still here, you know, having these discussions, doing these books, doing these readings is kind of the biggest, I guess, testimony to the fact that this has been real. This has been helpful to people. You continue to do this. But you also were doing things people weren't aware of. And that's kind of where Chasing Evil, the newest book, comes in. You know, so tell us about this. You're reading people. It's a career. You're doing it on radio. And some kind of way become more or less an FBI investigator.
Kind of. So part of the journey of development was I wound up doing a lot of radio. And I liked doing radio because I had a job at a hospital where I wanted to keep. My degree was working. I was working on a master's, you know, to do that in healthcare administration. And I liked the fact that I could do what I do. People would know my name, but they wouldn't know what I looked like. So radio was my go-to when it came to like any type of promotion or media. And it was live and interactive, and nobody could accuse me of, you know, being edited because it was live radio.
Right.
So when I would do New York City radio, I had one station that I was on quite a bit. It was a very successful like kind of segment that they would have. And Robert Hillen, an FBI agent at the time in that area, heard me on the radio and took it upon himself that he wanted to expose me as a fraud. So he came to me under the guise of a real case, trying to debunk what I do. So he was me to me, as you had pointed out earlier.
He was you to you, but he wasn't 15. He was an FBI agent who was coming, trying to debunk you.
Correct. Okay. And he came to me, and he had brought a real case, a specific case that we talk about, which is the overarching case in the book. Mm-hmm. He also went around to women in the office and said, can you give me something of yours, an article? And he put their stuff in evidence bags along with the actual evidence bags of the case he brought me. Okay. And that was the beginning of our connection, when I took the evidence case, the evidence bags that didn't belong to the case, and I moved them on the side of my desk and said, I don't know what these are, but these have nothing to do with this and your case. And then moving forward, I wound up giving him information on that case. I wound up giving him information about himself. And that got later validated with his parents, which gave instantaneous validation of what just took place. And then he had the same moment with me that I had when I had my first reading. So it was almost like a full cycle moment where I did to him what was done to me. And then from that, he had said, can you help me further? Is this something that I could utilize? And I kind of felt like I was like a new screwdriver in his toolbox. So I'm very clear. I did not work with the FBI.
Right.
I work for a three-letter organization called the BOB. I work for Bob. And Bob happened to be an FBI agent. And it became a really interesting journey, because for me, it wasn't something that I had an interest in doing, because my dad, who was a cop, said to me, make sure you don't work with the police. Like, don't sully my name. Make sure you don't do that. So I jokingly say, I didn't work for the police. I worked with the FBI instead. You know, so, I worked around it.
So even as you kind of had, I mean, like, success seems like a kind of dismissive word, but I think you know what I mean. Even as you were established and credible and doing all of these things, your father, as the cut and dry police officer, was like, okay, that's nice. Like, you do your thing, but don't cross into this field, and maintained that.
Yeah, he did, actually. He never knew I did this in life. He passed in 2002, but he never knew that I was assisting in any shape, way, or form. The only time I ever got what I would say would be I'm going to take it as a compliment, is I was at Crossing Over, the TV show, and I went to check my email, and I got an email from him that, do you remember the psychic Miss Cleo had gotten arrested or something?
Absolutely. The accent and all.
Call me now, lady. Okay. Well, long story short, when she got arrested, he sent me a link to that article and said, it's people like this that make what you do look bad. Okay. And I was like, wow.
Okay.
This could be that's a partial comment in some way. I should frame this. Like, yeah. What date and time is this, you know? But I didn't push that envelope. I just kind of like let it be there, because I didn't want to open up that conversation again. I knew where he was, and whether he was proud of my accomplishments or not, I'd like to believe that at some point he was. But I feel like whether he was or wasn't, I was still in my own way working through what those issues were with him, through now my connection to Bob. So it became like a pseudo patriarchal kind of vibe, even though we're close in age.
Yeah. The Chasing Evil book, Shocking Crime, Supernatural Forces, and FBI Agent Search for Hope and Justice, written with you, John Edward, and Bob, that you're talking about, former FBI agent. Was it ever frustrating? Because you read through this book, you guys worked, you know, you did not work for the FBI and had to be very careful in terms of legal issues and many issues about how actually involved in cases you were. But as you share information, you guys together made some really significant steps in solving crime and serial killers and identifying additional information. Was it ever frustrating when you're getting this criticism or critique or the struggle for credibility, knowing that you're helping, like you're using that to really make a difference, but you can't talk about it?
So, yes, to answer your question directly, were there a couple of moments where I was being attacked during the Crossing Over years, like ardently being attacked? Yes. Did I want to, like, in those moments be like, oh yeah, well, what about this?
Right.
And then I just I had to sit with what my intention was. My intention over the last 30 years was never to do the what about this, hey, look at me kind of vibe. It was more, I'm flexing and strengthening my ability in a direction that I don't want to do for clients, but yet I'm doing for myself, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. And it's not, I want to be really clear. I have a great respect for law enforcement. I have a great respect for what they do. And it was out of that respect that I really never did put my energy there. Bob came to me. I didn't seek this out. So when he asked for assistance, I said to him, yes, I'll help you, but keep my name off of stuff. Mm-hmm. And he said, no problem. I want to keep my job. Like, let's not complicate right. this. So that was our working relationship. So somebody recently said to me, if that was your working relationship, why now? Like, right. why do you want to talk about it now? And I will tell you, he's left the FBI. And when you read the book, when you read Chasing Evil and you see the trajectory of Bob, the person, and what the work in his life did with, to, and for him, and some of the sacrifices somebody like Bob makes in a job that never gets the credit, never gets the validation, never gets the voice. When he wanted to tell this story, I was like, sure, we'll do this.
Okay, let's so he wanted to do this. Like, he was kind of, let's do this.
I will say that there was one story in the book before. It was a story that has to do with this little boy that was found. It was at that moment, was the first time I saw, and I said to him over the phone, actually most of the time we met was always on the phone. I said to him, if you want to go public with this for you now, if you want to do that, I'll support you. And he did, but he didn't want to do it. And I was like, that's cool. I don't need the attention. I'm already known in my field. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I'm already known for doing what I do. Whether or not people knew this or not doesn't affect me. So when this came up again, I was like, yeah, we could do this. So it was a mutual agreeing upon. It's not like I'm doing this because I don't want to do this. I wanted the story to be told, but this is more in his voice. It's more of a narrative coming from his case files. And I'm there to kind of give the supernatural color to the story that in his world is very black and white.
How hard was it to do a book like this? I mean, because this FBI investigations, he has retired, but obviously some of the cases, they were FBI investigations. So I would imagine you had to have all sorts of hoops that you had to jump through, or legal barriers, or protecting information. I mean, I don't know, to talk about some of these cases that you were involved with, serial killers, FBI investigations.
I have to tell you, I don't know the exact words that he used, that he had said this to me, but normally to get something vetted, I don't know, was like a month. Mm-hmm. And I think this book took like 9 months to get vetted, to get through. And it's been vetted.
Does this feel like, you said you never really were seeking it, didn't really need the validation, but it seems like as people read this, even some of the skeptics, like this is not you telling somebody that their family members are proud of them. And there's a place for that as well. Like I believe in that. I have had readings. I appreciate that. When my father passed, it was very comforting to me to have that type of discussion. But this is different. Like for the, is it industry? You know, for the skill, the talent, to be using that for something like this, that's different. Like that is validating, I mean, for people who really do it and not the people who, you know, like your father was talking about, who get arrested for being fraudulent. But isn't it validating for the whole kind of industry that this can be used for good?
I hope so. I mean, I hope that is the goal. I hope that it will bring, eyes to the subject matter in a way that's different. I hope that people will perceive the subject matter different. I'm always going to err on the like bracing myself for impact moment of the attack that's going to come in and kind of anticipate like, well, if you can do this, how come you haven't worked on that case? If you can do this, then how come you haven't worked on that case? And that's why I tell people it's really not, I've never been public about this because it's not the direction of the work that I do. It's not something that it's not something that I'm interested in doing. I did it with and for Bob. I remember I was in California when they had the mudslides, and there was a police officer who stood up at my event and she said, can you help me? Can you help us? And I said, I'll try. You know, I was sure. I didn't want to work with her. I actually asked her if she would work with Bob. I said, can you work with him? He was so good at knowing how to interview me and get information out of me that I was like, if I'm going to do this, then I want it to go through him. So he's really been my medium for this. It's not something that I put a lot of focus on outside of this, but yeah, I hope it brings credibility in a different way.
And I think that you raise a really interesting point because, again, this is an FBI agent sharing information. Well, not sharing information. So that's one of the things that was interesting about the book. So he did not, in almost all circumstances, he didn't and couldn't provide you with information and ask you to interpret it. He essentially was getting information from you based on cues or property or what have you. He couldn't give you specifics.
No. No, and he knew, and this is what was the beauty of the connection. He knew not to cross the line of giving me information because then that would color I would get a bias. Mm-hmm. I would have an absolute bias. So I have to, whenever I'm doing a reading, I have to completely trust what I'm seeing, hearing, and feeling. And if I know, like, if I'm talking to somebody and you happen to say, you know, if I'm reading for you and you go, oh, I really hope my grandpa Robbie comes through.
Right.
Now in my mind, I'm like, well, now you just told me that your grandpa's passed and you just told me his name's Robbie. So it's like, those are two things that now can't come up. So those become obstacles in the way of the process. So he knew that. So he knew not to say anything. And then he would give nothing as validation. Like he would be like, okay, I understand that. And then what about this? Okay, I don't understand that. Well, what about this? And the layers that he would be able to go, what kind of, for me, it was kind of cool because it gave me an opportunity to do something that is not a place that I would go in a reading because it's not what people would need for me in a reading. Now, I've gotten criminal stuff with clients, but then they would have to go and pass it on to the investigators in their field.
It really is interesting that the skeptic evolves into what you do because it in listening to you, it shapes how you do it. Like you're sitting there recognizing, okay, as the skeptic, you just gave me the person's name. You just gave me this information. And so now if I go down that path, you know, I've become that person that I didn't believe in and don't trust. It, in some ways, being the skeptic, it I don't know, does it handicap you? Because it's like, wait, don't tell me that. I don't want to be driven in that direction.
No, it makes me better because being the skeptic means that you're always looking for information, right? If you're always constantly wanting to evolve and be better, then being skeptical just means that you're looking for validation data and things to kind of give credibility. So that's the good. I think everybody who does this work should come at it with a skeptical mindset and a skeptical eye. It makes you better at what you do.
This is so interesting. And I know that we have to wrap up. I've interviewed a couple of psychics in the past. I have never sat down for an extended period of time and been so fascinated by the information and the work and the background that at no point did myself or anybody in the room or kind of veer in the direction of, so what are you seeing for me? Like that just, it's fascinating. And I encourage people to check out the book. Skeptics, believers, people who are interested in how cases are solved. It's really interesting. Before we let you go, how do people, I mean, you do have a network and a streaming platform and you still kind of do these things. How do people get in touch and stay in touch?
You can go to johnedward.net. So there's no S on Edward. So johnedward.net. And the platform is called evolveplustv.com. So evolveplustv.com.
Way to stay in touch and pick up, you know, one of the 8, soon to be 9 best-selling books. John Edward, I appreciate you spending this time with us. It was fascinating. I mentioned to you before we got on that my producer is traveling. She is somebody whose life you have impacted for years. She came here from Poland and was telling stories about how, like, kind of following you for years. She was skeptical and had concerns, but loved the way that you approached it and not seeking validation and not trying to lead people down a specific path. And so she has been someone who's reading the books and kind of followed your career and came to me and was like, he agreed to do it. We've got to do this interview. The book is coming out. And she was absolutely right.
Well, thank her. Thank you. Thank you. And thank her. I appreciate that.
John Edward, we leave, as I pointed out, every episode of The Pulse with the same question, because the theme of the show is use your voice for good. So to you, this almost sounds like a dumb question to ask somebody who does what you do. But when you hear use your voice for good, what does that phrase mean to you?
Oh, very, very, very quickly. Using your voice for good by today's standards means to look at the litmus test of what's good for humanity. A lot of people are faced with choices and decisions about what to do, where to be, who to be with, and how to look. And you want to walk the path of what's good for your community and what's good for humanity. If anything goes against humanity, then you're on the wrong side of history.
I appreciate you. Thank you for spending this much time with us.
Thank you.
Guys, thanks so much for listening to the Pulse with Bill Anderson podcast with psychic medium, investigator, best-selling author, John Edward. I was fascinated. I think it's one of those things where even if you're a skeptic, if you read through this book and you hear the experiences that he had, his kind of journey, again, believe, don't believe, but it's fascinating kind of going through that whole process. Hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Do me a favor, like, subscribe, follow, whatever it is that shows up on your screen, so that you get a notification every week when a new episode of The Pulse comes out. You also can download the Fox Local app. All of our episodes are right there on demand. And you can hit me up on social media at BillAFox29. That's on Instagram. And I'm building my TikTok page like 5 years too late. But go ahead, catch up. Hit me up on TikTok as well. Thank you so much for listening, and I leave you today as I always do, reminding you whenever you can, use your voice for good and have a good one.